Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. I want to remind you, even though a lot of you know this because you've probably been with us many times before, that our goal is really to bring you credible, valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. We want to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community, and that means sometimes what the long-term ramifications of changes in our society are, or in some cases, what the lack of change or reflection on long-term ramifications in our society really brings to us instead. Think global warming, but that's not what we're talking about today. We're going to talk today about an organization that I suspect everyone has heard of, and I would have to say my hunch is a very large portion of us don't know what they do, other than there's some hunch that they may belong to or be part of an organization dealing with children, and that's First Five. First Five is celebrating their 20th anniversary of giving children the best possible start in their life, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Here's something to think about. This is not a proverb or proverbial statement from me. This is actually was suggested to me through the notes that we got to prepare for this program from the folks at First Five. 90% of a child's brain is developed by the age of five. So think about that for a second and realize that regardless of your age, you've only developed 10% beyond, terrible way to put this, what you had developed by the time you were five. And so how we look at those first 5 years is really very critical. We're going to talk today about really what the support of early childhood health and development is on the Central Coast, what First Five locally and its sister organizations throughout the state of California do, probably how it's funded and why it's funded. My guests today are Wendy Wendt, who is the executive director of First Five of San Luis County, Dr. Renee Bravo, who's a pediatrician in San Luis Obispo and a former First Five board commissioner, and Yesenia Silvas. See, I told you I was going to botch up some name. Sorry about that. And she is an early childhood development advocate with First Five. We're going to talk about the strides that they've made in 20 years, and we're also going to talk about what you may be able to do to help support organizations like that. Yes, even if you have no children or your children are long past five, there are many things you can look at as far as part of this organization. You can participate in this discussion if you would like. The phone number here is 805-781-3875. We all have to do 805 now, regardless of where you live, because if you don't, it doesn't go through. So that's 805-781-3875. We'll be with you for the hour. Want to remind you, if you do have some questions or things that you want to share with us about First Five or early childhood development for that matter, I encourage you to participate in this program reasonably early in the hour, because if you wait till the last part of the hour, sometimes we have to rush you along, and we would prefer not to have that happen. Wendy, let's give us some idea of what First Five is as an organization, because my hunch is from the notes that I've read and some of the research that I did is that everybody kind of thinks you're a service organization as opposed to a kind of in the background support organization. So how you balance that out is probably what we need to know first.
Well, thank you so much for having us today, Fred. This is an exciting month. 20 years ago, this month in November of 1998, the voters of California voted thumbs up on a proposition, Proposition 10, to create a funding stream to support early childhood initiatives, both funding of service programs throughout the state of California, as well as advocacy and systems building from the state level all the way down to the grassroots, county by county. So at that time, 20 years ago, 58 First Five agencies were born. And each of these local entities worked with community members, parents, pediatricians, teachers to determine how best to take a look at and begin addressing issues of need and urgency in this incredibly important time of life. As you mentioned, 90% of a child's brain is developed by the time she's five. This is our opportunity. And in 1998, the voters saw the wisdom of that idea, and we've been at it ever since in a variety of different ways across the state and in San Luis Obispo County. Yeah.
Primarily funded through the taxes collected from use of tobacco products.
Correct.
Okay. So a strange symbiotic relationship.
Yes, it's a mechanism that's occasionally used in state government where a particular behavior or product is taxed. And in this case, as you said, it's tobacco products, both cigarettes, e-cigarettes, and chew. And that's the source of the revenue, and the use of the revenue is designated for some sort of community human services problem that needs to be solved, in this case, the health and well-being of our youngest residents in this state.
So as an organization, you're not actually providing direct client services in most cases. You're providing the resources for other organizations within the community to do that.
Correct. In San Luis Obispo County in particular, that was the choice that was made when First Five San Luis Obispo County was first set up, that we would use the revenues that came into our county. It's approximately, at this point, about $1.5 million a year to support programs that are implemented by the experts in our community, so early childhood educators, family advocates, family resource centers, and the like. There are other First Fives in other counties of California that have historically offered more direct service programs under their own umbrella, but in our case, we went with more of a foundation funder model, and it's worked really well.
You know, and just to add a little bit to that, because what I think is unique about First Five and how it's worked in the community is that it's really acted as a specific community-based convener, bringing together people with needs, working with various groups who otherwise wouldn't come together to find a common cause and solve problems. And this is, I think, one of the brilliance of the whole idea 20 years ago was to, and it was unique 20 years ago, to be frank with you, to bring groups of people who had similar interests, pediatricians, community organizers, schools, to try to address focal issues in child development. I think what's really cool about First Five is that it's been successful. And what's really good about it, in my opinion, is that it is local. They had the wisdom when they designed this 20 years ago to give each community, each county in California, the right and the ability to craft the model in a way that it would really help that local community. Part of the issue, you know, we oftentimes complain about as people is that, you know, government doesn't do this right, doesn't do that right, et cetera. And there's a lot of basis for that criticism. However, in this case, I think they got it right the first time.
You bring up that was Renee Bravo speaking, Dr. Bravo. So thank you. People probably either recognize your voice or realize that you're the guy at the table that's a doctor. that a lot of organizations that feel like government is too much removed from their daily life or what they need. So the ability to do this as a county organization, I think. I'm glad you mentioned that because that's really, I think, a plus for a lot of people. I want to get kind of one ugly, the invisible elephant in the room out of the way, and that is, if we get people to stop smoking, does the funding source for these kind of programs just dry up? And I suspect that's something that you've looked at or think about.
So I'll take this one on, Fred. It's Wendy again. It's no secret that when Proposition 10 came into being and the Children and Families Act of California was birthed, that everyone knew at the time that this was going to be a situation where revenues would hopefully decline, because all of us in Health and Human Services would hope that smoking rates would go down in response to a tax. So it has that benefit, that health benefit that we all hoped for. We recognized that in parallel. It was going to be our responsibility as we worked through these local efforts, as Dr. Bravo referenced, that we needed to be not leaning too heavily on the source of revenue as if it would be there forever, but really use this unique and somewhat fleeting opportunity to build community investment and community responsibility for a lot of these kinds of priorities that over time, over these 20 years, we have successfully been able to bring more into the forefront of people's consciousness, inspire other sources of revenue to start to come to the table and really see this as a community-wide issue to be addressed. So in some ways, it's worked to the advantage of the broader community to have a not necessarily guaranteed source of revenue.
It's a great question, though. I've actually asked that myself. If we're successful in discouraging people with smoking, then do the funds for First Five eventually go away? Although that's theoretically possible, I see no.
our dreams don't fit with reality.
No, and it's still a free society. Yeah. People do smoke. Yeah. So,
yeah. I want to speak to one of the initial comments or points that you made, Fred, and I think it really fits within the work that Yesenia does, and it's the unique quality of First Fives in California and in San Luis Obispo to knit together expertise and wisdom and collaboration between the early childhood education field, the health field, and the family support field. We often silo those sectors in ways that are not fully beneficial to young children and families. And Yesenia works in a part of the county where First Five investments have kind of wrapped around an entire neighborhood in all of those different domains. And so I thought perhaps you could share a little bit about the work in Oceano.
Yeah, there's a lot of work going on in Oceano. Thank you, Wendy. So I'm a family advocate, First Five family advocate with the Lucia Mar Unified School District, and I work at the Family Resource Center. And Oceano is an amazing community. There are several preschools in the area. We have our Oceano School Readiness Program, which offers parent and child participation classes for free. And then we have our wonderful resource center, where we just have information about all the resources, or pretty much all the resources in San Luis Obispo County. We have a collaboration of different agencies that come to the center that offer their expertise in what field they work in. We have social workers from the department, social services department. We have Catholic Charities, a person from Catholic Charities. We have CAP SLO family advocates. So it really is a collaboration. And when families come in or are referred to our programs, there's always somebody there to help them and give them information that they need. And it's really about empowering families. We are all in the same type of work, and we all love our families and are there to help them.
I think you may fall in an interesting niche that I think I understand, but a lot of people may not understand, and that is that you're dealing with, in a lot of cases, some migrant population.
Yes.
Population that from a financial standpoint or from a language standpoint sometimes doesn't have a computer in a home.
Yes.
The ability for them just to say, oh, I'm going to just Google something to find out what I can do for my child doesn't fit within their social network. So I suspect you do a lot more face-to-face work in that community than maybe what First Five does anyplace else.
Yeah, exactly. We do have a pretty large, migrant population in Oceano. A lot of our families really don't have transportation or do not drive. Some of our families, they're young parents. And so it's easier for them to come into a center like ours and get the services. And we do a lot of that researching for them on the computer. There is a lot of literacy issues with our families. So we do a lot of kind of the hand-holding and just really empowering them to find those services that they need and to educate them as well, just so that they can understand that they are powerful and that they can be the best teachers for their children. Yeah. So,
if you looking at what you do on a daily basis, can you give us an idea? What are the top four or five things that people are likely to approach you about related to First Five that they're kind of either at a loss to find or just need assistance getting connected to?
Yeah, okay. So that's pretty easy. We have people that come in the office every day. So a lot of times we have young parents that are in search of housing. Housing is huge. Affordable housing, which is, of course, we all know a big issue in this county. That's one of the main things, and it's difficult. That's a pretty difficult one to help families with, but we do have connections with agencies that help with that. So we are able to refer them to those agencies or even help them search on the internet themselves. We use Craigslist a lot. We make phone calls with them. Child care. We have a lot of parents that need affordable child care so that they can work, because we know now both parents have to work and they have to work full-time hours, and they want that quality child care for their children. So that's an issue. That's something that we work closely with families, and also preschools. We just don't have enough preschools for our 0 to 5. First Five is wonderful. They have our First Five in Oceano preschool, but it's limited space, and also Head Start, and they also have their requirements as well. So there just aren't enough. So those are three of the big things that I see a lot. And of course, the wages are low, so people are looking for training. If they could get something, that some kind of paid training, that would really help them. A lot of parents would like to go back to school, but it's pretty unaffordable. They just have to work a lot of hours, so they just don't have that time.
It may not be something that you really have to address every day, but it occurred to me as you were explaining that you often may end up with residents and migratory population that are not here legally,
mm-hmm.
and they are afraid to talk to a government organization. I suspect your office in Oceano is, for a lot of them, more approachable than going over to the county social services office, which I think is still in Grover Beach for South County, which for a lot of people is just a fear, because if I want what's best for my child, but I'm afraid because I'm not here legally. The reality is a lot of people are not here legally.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably something that you have to really talk about. One of the first questions you often get is, can I talk to you without worried about looking over my shoulder?
Oh, yeah. And that's usually the referring party. They'll let them know ahead of time. Or we're pretty well known in the Oceano community. So oftentimes that's the first thing we say. This is a safe place. We are here to help you, and we'll do whatever you can. We do have to let them know, though, that if we suspect any child abuse, that's something that is reportable by law. We have to report that.
Yeah.
But other than that, and
I could not imagine that you are not a mandatory reporter.
Yeah. Some parents just aren't aware of that. And that's one of the things that the school has, make sure that they. Let these parents know that it is a safe place and we are here to help. And, there are programs that some families do not qualify for because of their status here. But we do whatever we can to help all families regardless.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We do have a caller, and I don't like to make them wait very long if possible. Mary Lou from Paso Robles. You're on the air, Mary Lou. Just step into the discussion.
Hi there, I was just listening to Yesenia, and I'm Mary Lou Gomez. I'm here in Paso Robles. I'm the site coordinator, the First Five site coordinator. And that is also what we do here in Paso. We have a small office, And we do a lot of connecting to resources, the families connecting them to resources. We also, I am employed by the school district, so we really work very close with the families in our elementary schools here at Georgia Brown and also in Paso Robles, really. I have, because like Yesenia was saying, there is a shortage of preschools. So one of the things that I also have here on Wednesdays is a literacy hour for our children, which is modeled like the library, because I'm also a parent, and that's how it started. It evolved, me going, taking my children to the library, and then once I got this job, we started doing a literacy group. I do have a very, I work in a very, a lot of Spanish-speaking families, a lot of Spanish-speaking families. So I do have two classes here a week in Spanish and one in English. And this is geared for families and children, of children 0 to 5. But really, I have most of the children that I come to my program are 3 and under. Because once they hit 3.5, 4 year olds, we connect them to the private, to the public or state preschools. And it's just a really great thing to do for our community. I mean, I don't think we could do this without the support of our community, our the organizations we collaborate with, all the agencies in the area, and also with the support of the First Five organizations.
Okay. Thank you for your information. Appreciate you for what you do and for giving us a call today.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
She was talking about, actually she alluded to the fact that looking at the transition from as children get older, that's probably something that you have to address in some way every day. And I don't know, from a legal standpoint, and Renee may be able to talk about this too, having been a board member, is First Five legally locked into when somebody turns five, you have to say you need to get services someplace else, or how do you address that?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. It's actually was one of the initial concepts that we have 5 years to try to anticipate and transition them into other programs that will continue. The public school starts at 5, and that's usually where it goes from there. This was the whole concept of addressing 0 to 5 evolved out of the whole thought that kids were getting to kindergarten, many of them without adequate preschool preparation, without adequate addressing, without adequate dental care, without adequate vision care, without adequate health care in general. And by the time they're getting to the kindergarten population time, we're getting to public school, they really were behind quite a bit. And so that's why this evolved, because it exists after the age of 5. The systems were all there. That's why this developed. I want that not to be lost in the conversation, is that there was a big need before we addressed this. And frankly, California led the way on this. And that it was I called it the grand experiment 20 years ago, and it worked. So and the fact that we're even having discussions now in terms of meeting the regional needs is something that we just barely dreamed of in the late 1990s. So
I would also add to that a child's life, of course, doesn't stop at age 5. And so there's, you know, we sometimes laugh about that
think,
a little
they
bit.
They think
like
it does.
The,
right.
They used to go to school. They just know that they know everything after they're 5
right.
And will tell us.
Well, there's this kind of mirror image, I think, subliminal misperception in society that, you know, kids are covered when they hit 5 because they're in the schools. And I think one of the reasons that First Five has been such a powerful and important addition to the mix of supports in our state is that the period from 0 to 5, there's no system like a school system to guarantee basic services and supports for children. So that's one point. The other I wanted to make, and I think both in Yesenia's community in Oceano as well as Mary Lou, who just called in, we've worked really hard to partner with First Five Funds and local partners to create bridge opportunities into the schools so that families are developing relationships with kindergarten teachers, with the principal of the local elementary school, with family programs, long before their child enters kindergarten, as a way to reach into that eventual experience and smooth the way.
Yeah. We recently did a program about foster care. We talked with Family Care Network and County Social Services. And there is a similarity of concern, and that is that if people feel like that the services are not readily available to them when their child reaches five, you end up with some of the same things that were a fear in the foster care program, which is, okay, as soon as a child is 18 years old, the foster family says, you know, that we can't do this anymore, and how that transition is. So I think that becomes a legitimate fear under a lot of different umbrellas. Renee really, I think, brought a lot of it home, and that is that once you get kids into formal public school, there's pre-K available in a lot of cases. There are daycare programs available, but there's kind of a magic thing that happens when a child is officially in kindergarten or then officially in first grade at the age of six, that okay, now they're more proactively monitored by the system through the school system. But I think that probably for a lot of parents that Yesenia might deal with on a regular basis, who have not had children before, or who are reasonably new to the United States, or at least the area, that they don't know where the resources are available for them, and that's a real fear. You know, gee, I'm not sure. I think my child had all the immunizations they needed as an infant, but I'm not sure, and I really don't know who to turn to ask about that. I think I have what occurred to me is that I'm familiar with the Tri-Counties Regional Center. There may be a lot of parents who have some issues that would fall under the category of the services of Tri-County Regional Center, but they are indeed people who have no idea what that organization is or where they came from, that they even exist. So I think that becomes a question too. My hunch is a good portion of the people that you're dealing with on a daily basis come to you and say, I don't know who to call, I don't know who to ask, so I'm asking you first.
Yeah, we get that a lot. So that would be, you know, a pretty probably intense interview with the parent just to see what all their needs are, and then how we would assess them, what their needs are, and then how we can help, what agencies are available to help them. And sometimes, again, like you were saying earlier, there is that lack of trust. So there are often times that we make the phone call with the parent. Oftentimes we've established a relationship with the person on the other line, whether it's an agency. So that kind of helps out. And we'll make those appointments with them if need be, just because of that lack of trust or fear. Some parents are just young parents. We have parents right, you know, in high school, right out of high school, that have no experience with agencies and needs of their children. And so where their mothers maybe made their appointments before, now they're the adult and they have to do this. So this is something that they need to learn, and having somebody there to help them learn these skills and make these phone calls and feel confident, that's what we do.
Yeah, you bring up a critical population, I would say, that you have to deal with, and that is, since we're dealing with children who may be newborns, mm-hmm. Up to five, you're dealing a lot with parents that could be anywhere from, frankly, 15 to 25 or 30 years old, but may have never dealt with government agencies, healthcare agencies, may have no idea what's available as far as services. I have this child that's doing real well, but I have no skills as to I'm a parent and I have no parenting skills.
Yeah.
So my hunch is you probably spend as much time coaching and working for resources for how to parent, yes, as you do with how to look after the needs of the child directly.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so that's something that we see all the time, too. Thank you very much. And so we are also trained to help parents help their children reach developmental stages that they need to be at in order to thrive. So We do that. And then we also do a lot of parenting skills. We do a lot of referrals to maybe CAPSLO, their parent educators. We also are very connected with the SAFE program in South County. And so they offer a lot of parenting support. They actually have a lot of parenting classes going on now. Some deal with trauma, you know, baby nutrition, just a variety of topics that they cover. And so, yeah.
And I'm sure some of them, my hunch would be that some of them you're dealing with basically children who haven't been born yet, so pregnant parents who are looking for some skills and resources.
Yeah.
I wasn't a parent till I was 34, and I can tell you at 34 I was damn clueless. So if I were 17, I was, let's not go there. But I think it's something that having it available for a lot of people, for people who live in communities that don't have an advocate like you right next door, or in Paso Robles, where it's right in, also in the school system there, are people at a loss to even know you exist? Does that come up often?
I feel like maybe years back, yes, but now there's so much more information out there. Schools are aware that we exist. Preschools, childcare providers. I've had parents come in because their childcare provider, you know, sent them in, and I've had child care providers come into my office and to let me know that there are parents out there that need my services. And of course, you know, I have to have the parent come in, but, and we give information to those child care providers. But I think that because now there are a lot of advocates in pretty much all of, I can speak for San Luis Obispo County, CAPSLO has their family advocates that offer the same services that I offer, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, we're pretty well known.
Yeah, we had a couple of callers. I don't want to keep them waiting too long. Let's see, Charlene from San Luis Obispo, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. You still there?
Hi everyone.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I am. For me?
Yes, for you. You're on the air.
Great. Hi, everyone. I want to thank Yesenia for the work she's doing. And
thank you, Charlene.
I'm the director of Parents Helping Parents, and we're also a family resource center, and we are supported by First Five, and we definitely value that opportunity. And we specialize in supporting families that have children with special needs. And similar to some of the paths that Yesenia is describing, we work with families when they are suspecting a developmental delay or are diagnosed with a disability. And we provide support to those families in terms of emotional support, education, and referrals to other agencies. And we have two offices. They are both located at the regional center. So we do work closely with the Tri-County's Regional Center in referring families to them, or if they have a family that needs support, we will also support them, and the referrals go both ways. But I know that we rely heavily on Yesenia and the other family resource centers in terms of housing, as you had described, and many other of the services that are out there in terms of social service. And I have with me here Sarah McGraw. She's our parent resource specialist. And we just wanted to demonstrate just in some aspects the work that we do. And it is really a result of the funding that has been provided for the last 20 years from First Five.
Okay.
Hi. Afternoon.
Okay.
Oh, I'm Sarah. I'm a bilingual resource specialist here with Parents Helping Parents. And I'm working here because I also have a child with a disability, and so part of what makes us unique is that those of us who work here can relate on a personal level to what parents might be going through at different stages, whether it be a young child with a new diagnosis or just a suspicion of delays or anything up through the line, all ages. But we do a lot of different things here. We have a lending library of books, DVDs, and other resources that anyone can check out from one of our resource libraries. We do support groups for parents We're bilingual here in our office. And then we do a lot, we organize a lot of trainings and educational workshops too. And a lot of the ones that focus on, that might focus on families of younger children, we've had guest speakers come on, come in to speak to families about behavioral issues and behavior support, toilet training, which within the special needs population can have a wider age range than the typical population, speech and language development and other things. Some of the groups and things we do here in our office could also include helping a family organize their child's paperwork, which when you have a child with special needs, it is significantly more than another child it might be. So you're going to have possibly more medical paperwork. You might be receiving special support services through preschool. You might be a client of the regional center and have the paperwork that comes with that. So that's one of the things we do. So we invite parents into our offices, our resource libraries, often for these kinds of things. But a lot of what we do might be over the phone as well. And we often get referrals, or families often hear about us. It could be through their pediatrician. It could be through a child care provider. Like Charlene said, we collaborate with the regional center, and they send us referrals for families who could benefit from more family support. And then sometimes from another family resource center. So recently we had a parent contact us who had been given our information, and you know, she was able to talk about what was happening with her children, and she had two young children and within her family, and expressed some of her needs for information and support, and we were able to, you know, talk to her over the phone, listen to her in a way that, you know, gave her, you know, we hope the emotional support she needed too, because we could understand the journey she was on. Yeah. But when we, you know, were able to send her information on, for example, social and recreational opportunities that might be more specific to children with different needs, information about the workshops we do or other ones around the community that might be beneficial. You know, we also provide information about developmental milestones, and invited her to our support group for families of younger children. You know, and then once we make that contact, you know, we always follow up too, because we want to know if was it useful? Did they, you know, get what they needed, or is there still, you know, something more that they need?
And this is what you're doing is a very good example of the kind of networking. The fact that we started this program, one of the first things I mentioned was the fact that the First Five is not really a direct provider of services as much as it's putting together the resources and the referrals to those. I've got some other people on hold, so we've got to get going, but I thank you very much for your input on this.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. That was line. Okay, sorry. I've got to sort out the numbers here. Okay, so let's see. Doug, you're on the phone. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Doug Major. I'm an eye doctor. We were fortunate to be the first people to use First Five funds to outreach to our preschool vision screening program.
Sure was.
Yeah. Okay. Are you still doing it?
We sure
actually,
are.
Everybody in the room, this is not television. Everybody's still shaking their heads here.
Children, and it was something that was sort of hit and miss before pro bono, and First Five allowed us to really make sure that all the Head Start kids, all the preschool kids that are available, all the five and under. And so I appreciate my associate, Dr. Dan Heil, that does the majority of that. But we have usually 10 other eye doctors that participate in some way or the other.
Well, Doug, you've been a leader in that,
though. The whole program.
Yeah,
and so it's sort of unique
leader.
When one in four, and the numbers are supposed to be increasing. And this is the low-hanging fruit, Fred. This is the easy thing to fix early, and it makes a huge difference on, it's been shown now since we started, including, you know, being able to read, be able to concentrate, and particularly in our Latino-Hispanic populations, a whole number of individuals that have a high prescription because of genetic condition. And so it's really gratifying to try to catch those kids early, and it does make a huge difference.
Yeah, I think, Doug, I think you bring up a very good point, too. I think because not just in the population that you're dealing with in a lot of cases with First Five, who may be a predominantly disadvantaged in some cases population, but I think for the general population, there, it's difficult to figure out with small children whether or not there is a visual impairment. Because, you know, my three-year-old does not explain to me that they can't read the words I'm trying to share with them out of a book. Well, maybe they can, but in most cases, that's a tough one to do. So that's I suspect with this, you were dealing with and still dealing with a population in a lot of cases of parents that don't even realize that this is something that they need to pay attention to.
Yeah, the problem is then we've got this cultural thing that we have to bridge. And right now we've got a problem with one of the smaller school districts in North County that we had a note of like 20 kids that we referred, 25 kids, and trying to get them to come in. And so the connection has to do with the school nurses, which helps so much in this county, as well as the health directors for Head Start. And so, but it's so fascinating when you have a change in a school nurse and all of a sudden a program goes. And so the retraining, the constant retraining, the importance of this program has to be continually reevaluated and retrained to people. But we're just excited. First Five is such a great idea from Rob Reiner and those of us who were involved with it initially. And, you know, it was a win-win, reduce smoking, which San Luis has always been on the forefront of, as well as helping these kids. My only concern or my only always goal would be to provide real services to real kids and not just the kids that have profound problems. I think this new brain research should be available to all parents, and especially new parents, because once you train that brand new mother, you know, there's some great programs that makes a huge difference to the whole line as they have more children.
Yeah. Well, from what Renee Bravo said a moment ago, to commend you, I suspect you've been working on this for the 20 years of First Five. And I think as a community, we need to admire the fact that it didn't burn you out doing it. That's something that you're still an advocate for. Thanks for the call.
Hey, best wishes and thanks, Wendy and Marie May and everybody there, and a great program.
Fred. Take care.
Thanks for calling in, Doug.
Yeah. Okay. Look, from the looks of the next call, this is Susan in Grover Beach. Is this the Susan in Grover Beach?
It's Susan in Grover Beach.
Beach. We're doing great. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. I have a big shout out to the three people around your table. They've all been great, well, supporters from long, long ago, as I was. And I just wanted to, I've been listening to all the programs who are calling in, and I'd like to also just make sure that the advocacy and systems integration and systems change approach gets discussed just a little bit, because I think that in the First Five legislation was just about as important as anything. And that goes to the answer of, as the money declines, because tobacco sales do decline, how do you best use your money? And so that if you can shift to that advocacy approach, which I know Wendy's doing, it just made sense to, you know, enlighten folks. I'll backtrack just a minute. When First Five started, money for zero to fivers just wasn't existent. And so we had to do a whole lot of community education. And that continues today with the First Five California's Talk, Read, Sing, which is a program just to parents, very simple, talk, read, and sing to your kids. And that will every parent in all counties can do that. It doesn't matter whether you're, you know, a professor at Cal Poly or a migrant laborer in the fields. And so that's kind of the beauty of First Five, to me at least, and why I was proud to be a part of it for a while. And I just wanted to hear Wendy's thoughts on that.
Okay. By the way, before you get Wendy's, I want to tell you, I don't believe you ever you told me about the talk and the read part. You never told me to sing to my daughter because you've heard me sing.
Well, in some
for
cases,
clarifications,
you know, it's not a good idea.
This is Susan Hughes, who was the first executive director of First Five. You were the first executive director, right?
I was the first and the only up until about 4 years ago, and then Wendy has done such a fabulous job since.
Okay, great.
Susan, I'm so glad to hear your voice. Hello.
Hello.
I've been wanting to insert what is, in my view, the magic of First Five around this middle ground that we sit in between being able to support tractable, local efforts, the likes of Doug Major's program, family resource centers like Yesenia's or Mary Lou's, family resource centers like the ones that the one that Charlene described, and also being a voice for early childhood on these bigger, more systemic level problems or areas of need that we can't solve with a relatively small and rapidly declining revenues that come through the First Five system, but that we can amplify or showcase or bring to the level of public awareness problems that we need to solve together. And two examples that sort of walked by earlier on in the conversation, one is the issue around child care and the affordability of child care and the ability in this state to cultivate a workforce in child care and preschool where people can earn a professional wage and parents can afford to send their children to preschool and family child care and infant toddler care. This is a problem First $5 can't solve on their own, but we can be champions. We can team up with the Head Starts, with the Departments of Education, with family advocate organizations, and make noise all the way up through the food chain from city councils up to the legislature around an issue that on our own is intractable, but if we advocate on behalf of a solid early childhood education system, we all are the better for it. And First Five has become this voice of advocacy around problems that we can't solve individually, but if we band together, it becomes a more addressable priority for the state as a whole. It's been exciting over the last year in particular to see the way these local grassroots First Fives have started building into more of a network of voices, unified voices, to make the case for some pretty important issues around early childhood, be it child care, support for children of immigrant families, and a whole host of other issues that we all care a lot about.
Yeah. Susan, before you go away, as I'm listening to Wendy's comments, it occurred to me when you were first on as executive director of First Five, you did get a lot of resistance and an incredible amount, I believe, of skepticism. Oh, another strange, cockamamie government-funded program trying to flip some resources around, and that was probably tough to address.
Well, it wasn't easy. We knew it would be an uphill battle, but you know, as Dr. Bravo mentioned, the beauty of First Five San Luis Obispo County was that it was locally centered, and we had the occasion to have Cacho Asajian as our chair, and Dr. Bravo as a commissioner representing the medical society, and Julian Crocker, and all of those commissioners who could help us open all the doors that we needed to open, and they weren't used to being opened and then around the table together. But we weren't successful completely. And it's a social norm change is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, but the programs, the school readiness programs in Paso and Oceano, as you've heard, have just continued. And the schools have finally said, this is a good thing. You know, they were as supportive as they could be, but they weren't quite as much in around the circle as they could have been. But again, people like Julian Crocker and Cacho helped us with that. So the beauty of the local commission is just, it's overwhelming. And it was one of the things that I was proud of and I truly enjoyed. And I certainly couldn't have done it alone.
Okay. Thanks for what you did do. Thanks for what you continue to do. And you left a great legacy. And thanks for giving us a call, Susan.
You're welcome. Thank you all.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye, Susan.
Yeah, let's see. And okay. Is it Maura in Alameda?
Hi. Yeah, thanks Hi. For having me I guess on you're, the phone today. Well, I just wanted to call in. I'm calling from the First Five Association of California. We're the statewide organization that supports the 58 commissions.
That's why the room smiled when they saw your name show up on the board. Okay.
Yeah, no. And I just want to say a huge shout out to all of the commissioners, past and present. To Wendy and her fantastic team. It's been such a pleasure to see the growth of the commissions across the state, but especially along the Central Coast, where, as all of the other callers and commenters today have mentioned, just the growth in resources and services and supports for our most vulnerable families over the last 20 years has just been such an extraordinary gift to the state of California and truly the embodiment of what the voters intended 20 years ago. And I just couldn't agree more that it's the local approach, the local commitment of the commissions with their partner agencies, but linked to a statewide agenda for ensuring that all children enter school ready to succeed in life is just such a, I think it's something that, that Californians took a risk on 20 years ago and now is just part of the fabric of every community. So just thank you to everyone in San Luis Obispo and along the Central Coast for picking up this First Five work and bringing it forward so proudly.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Thanks for your support on the other end of this process.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. We're getting to the point where we're down to about my last proverbial few minutes when guests get to talk, and I do my best to shut up for a while. And I'm going to probably start off with you, Renee, because I had a question for you that we may have run out of time with because of the phone calls, which we wanted to share anyway. There are a lot of people. You happen to be in the medical profession and dealing with pediatrics, so your connection to this is probably very clear. I think for some people, there are things that people who don't have school-age children, don't have children under five, don't have any children at all, can do to participate or be part of organizations like this, either at a board level or other ways. So I would give you that the intro for your remarks at all.
No, I mean, I know where you're going with this because I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean, a society needs to invest in the smallest and most vulnerable of its people, its little children, because if we don't, it's going to cost us a lot later on. And I think that's clear. I think that message has gotten through. And I think that a compassionate society will see these needs regardless of where these children come from. I do want to give the impression that 0 to 5, I mean, that's every child. I mean, that's a huge population of every community, including our own county. And so investing in this population results in a lifetime of benefit. I mean, the cost is huge if you don't invest in children. And this is one of my personal crusades. Always kids seem to get what's left over. And 20 years ago, we decided that was no longer, the status quo was no longer acceptable. And then this came into being. This is one of the few things, really, I point to that says this investment in the children of our community has paid off, is resulting in systems that are in place to salvage vulnerable populations and children specifically, and it's making a difference. It really is. You ask the kids who have vision care. I mean, dental care. We all take advantage or take it for granted that we're going to get our teeth dealt with. But you know, large swaths of the population of little kids were dealing with rotten teeth for a long time. I'm just going to say it like it is. And you know, bringing the dental community together in First Five really addressed that. Now we're looking at early childhood development. I mean, there's a lot of kids out there who are not who have disabilities in terms of development that are not being addressed, and that's really affecting their lives later. So we're now looking at and trying to really focus on that. So First Five has really provided the vehicle to convene a lot of different stakeholders, and so I'm really grateful for that. I think that's one of the great things that we've been able to accomplish here, and I'm so glad to hear from Susan because, you know, she's a hero. She's one of my personal heroes in this. You know, she is a wonderfully patient woman who at the very, very, very onset of this just stuck with it. Yeah. And knew how to bring people together. And I'm going to be quiet because I can talk for an hour on this.
Okay, all righty. Okay. Yesenia, it's your chance, okay? Because I think Renee brought up a very good point, and that is how we basically make those connections with people and parents that feel like they don't have resources.
Yeah. And I just would like to give you a little example of some of the feedback that I've gotten from parents. We have had parents that have maybe moved into the Oceano community that had older children who weren't a part of the school readiness program, but their younger children were a part of it. So we've had children that have come in at 3 and have have participated in our parent child programs and then have gone on to preschool. So that's one of the things that we do. We try to get them connected with the preschool the following year, four-year-olds. And so the feedback that we've gotten is that those kids that have gone through our program, that have gone on to preschool and then to kindergarten, have done really well. Some in some cases even better than some of their siblings. And parents say they believe that it is because of these programs, because their children were able to participate and get that at a younger age. And so I actually have a parent that's coming to next week to the Board of Commissions that's going to talk about that. She had a child that came through our program and is doing really well. So that's what we do. We connect these families. We, you know, want them to try to bridge that gap from preschool or, you know, before preschool to preschool and then kindergarten. And we have some wonderful programs that do that.
And as you were saying that, it occurred to me you probably do a lot to teach parents how to be better advocates for their own kids.
Yeah, we do in a variety of ways.
Wendy, you're the executive director. You get the last word.
All right. Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you again, Fred, for having us on the show today. This is, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, 20 years of First Five in San Luis Obispo County and across the state. We will be celebrating at the next Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday, November 20th at 9 a.m. Please do come down. We'll have a party afterwards. I also want to say we've been celebrating this month, but we also recognize that there is much work to be done. We'll be engaging in strategic planning in the coming year and really see the strategic plan that we will be building next as a community plan for early childhood. And so if there are folks in the community listening to the show today who want to get involved in that conversation, please stay tuned. We'll be sending out information about how to get involved in that conversation. And if I have time, I would just say that we now know 20 years into this story a lot more than we did 20 years ago. We felt it in our hearts 20 years ago. We now know it scientifically. We know that 90% statistic now in a way that we didn't 20 years ago. We know economically that the return on investment for putting money into early childhood pays down the road. And as Dr. Bravo said just a couple minutes ago, we also know that children can't advocate for themselves. They don't vote. And it's up to us to protect them and to help them thrive.
Right, yeah. Maybe some of them have figured out what your phone number is, though, and they can say in preschool, I want to call my advocate. So, because I suspect part of what you do is train children to be better advocates for themselves as you train their parents.
Yes.
Also. Thank you for doing the program today and joining us today. This is it's a part of the community. It's our legacy. And the fact that we sometimes lose track of what our children are as far as our legacy, I think, is very important. This has been Central Coast Voices. We thank you for all being with us today. Next week is Thanksgiving, and we won't be on the air, but there'll be some great holiday programming here. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And I don't know what's going to be on the program in 2 weeks, so you just have to watch for your in your email box or on the website for what our upcoming program is. As I've told you many times before, and I'll tell you again, Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. You can see the report that we do every 3 years called Vital Signs at actionslo.org. Gives you an idea and a snapshot of what's going on in our community and our county. If you're interested in suggesting or feedback to this program, you can reach us at voices@kcbx.org. or 805-543-2323. I sometimes mix the phone numbers up. Sorry. Thank you to Wendy Wendt, Dr. Renee Bravo, Yesenia Silvas for being with us today, and for our callers, all that sounded like advocates for the children, which is what we're here for. Thanks very much. Have a great day and have a happy Thanksgiving.